Ever since he had come to Chico, John Henry had taken special note of the comings and goings of Sheriff Dav and the deputies, figuring that the more he knew about their habits, the better. Over the next few days, he increased that scrutiny even more, until he knew when each man was on duty and when he wasn't, and where they spent their time when they weren't working. Not surprisingly, the only one whose movements he really couldn't predict was Samuel Dav himself. The sheriff was an extremely cautious man. He could pop up anywhere, anytime. John Henry recalled how the baker, Wilhelm Heinsdorf, had claimed that Dav was some sort of supernatural being. John Henry could almost believe that. The man was a phantom, as hard to grab as the air. Without his crew of gun wolves, though, Dav would be no real threat. So, first things first. John Henry and the leaders of the uprising met in the stable behind the Collins' boarding house each night and put together their plan of assault. Alvin Turnage would strike first, capturing Fred Axminster at the boarding house. Once Axminster was tied and gagged, Turnage would go to the blacksmith shop and join forces with Peabody Farnum and four other men. The six of them would proceed to the hotel, where they would grab the four deputies who would be there. Meanwhile, five more men would go after the three deputies who would be sleeping in rooms on the second floor of the Buzzard's Nest. Speed, stealth, and surprise would be essential to the success of both missions. While that was going on, John Henry would take care of his part of the job, capturing the jail. Gil Hobart would be there, possibly with one or two deputies. If everything went as it was supposed to, the townsmen would bring the prisoners to the jail to be locked up. Once eight or nine of the deputies were behind bars, the odds would be a lot closer to even. There was plenty that could go wrong with the plan. John Henry fully expected that before it was over, something would go wrong. Men might well die. But the alternative was letting Dav's brutal rule over the town continue, and no one was willing to accept that. The next night, the group of revolutionaries would make their move. John Henry and the others had all left the stable and gone their separate ways after finalizing their plans. The night was quiet and dark. No one was around to see the shadow that suddenly stole along the outside of the stable's rear wall. The man had been concealed there in the thickest darkness, where he stood almost no chance of being spotted, and had waited in complete silence with his ear pressed to a tiny crack between the boards, listening to the low-voiced discussion inside. Nor was this the first night he had spied on the plotters inside the barn. He knew every bit of their plans. As he moved away from the stable, he stuck to the shadows as much as possible. He didn't want to be spotted back there. That could ruin everything. He couldn't avoid the moonlight entirely, though, and as he crossed quickly through a patch of it, for a second the silvery glow illuminated his face, casting shadows and throwing his features into stark relief. Then, Deputy Steve Buckner was out of the moonlight and continued hurrying through the night, away from the boarding house. John Henry had always been blessed with cool nerves, so he was calm the next day and able to carry on with his normal routine as if that night wouldn't likely bring with it powder smoke and flaming death. His day's patrol went peacefully. He went into both the bank and the blacksmith shop, and when Alvin Turnage and Peabody Farnum looked at him, their expressions were stony, as if they still considered him one of Sheriff Dav's gun wolves and weren't aware of his true identity. That was exactly how they needed to regard him for now. Despite his steady demeanor, the day seemed to drag, and John Henry was glad when the sun sank behind the San Juans. He went back to the office, where Carl Miller was sitting at the desk. Dav himself hadn't been around much the past few days, or at least he wasn't showing himself.
Everything's quiet.
That's what I'm hearing from the other fellas. Something's not right, though.
John Henry was careful not to show the alarm he felt. Had Miller somehow tumbled onto the fact that an uprising was in the works?
Thought I heard some thunder rumbling up over the mountains a while back. Could be we'll get a storm tonight. I always get this funny feeling back here when there's fixing to be a storm.
You could be right.
John Henry had seen a few clouds gathering to the west as well, but they hadn't closed in and blotted out the sun before it set. If a storm was indeed on the way, it would probably still be several hours before it got here. That might be a good thing. Some thunder and rain would help him and his allies conceal what they were doing. And under the circumstances, he would take any stroke of luck he could get.
I guess you're on your way back to the boarding house.
That's right. Miss Collins doesn't like it when people are late for supper.
Well, I wouldn't want to make any gal as pretty as Kate Collins mad at me. Of course, Steve Buckner's got his eye on her, too. You boys aren't going to wind up in a shooting scrape over her, are you?
No chance of that. Say, where's the sheriff these days? I've hardly seen him around lately.
He's been spending a lot of time with that newspaper man. Wouldn't surprise me if they were hatching plans for the boss to become an even bigger boss.
Me neither. If that were to happen, you reckon we'd go along with him wherever he went?
I wouldn't count on it. You can be an even bigger outlaw in politics, but you gotta be slicker about it.
John Henry thought that was probably one of the truest statements he had ever heard. Wisdom sometimes popped up in unlikely places. John Henry left the office and returned to the boarding house. He got to the house just as Kate was setting the last of the food on the table in the dining room. She gave him a brief glare, in keeping with how she treated anybody who bent one of her rules. John Henry smiled to himself, secure in the knowledge that they were allies in the effort to end Samuel Dav's rule over the settlement. Buckner was quieter than usual during the meal. That was a little troubling, but didn't have to mean anything. The house was dark and quiet when John Henry slipped out of his room a few minutes before midnight. He knew that Kate and her grandfather would be awake. He doubted if they had slept any during the evening. They were probably as keyed up with anticipation as he was. By morning, Chico would be free again, or else any resistance would be smashed so thoroughly that Dav could finish looting the town without any opposition at all. John Henry paused as he saw that Axminster's door was open. He drew his gun and approached cautiously. Axminster usually snored loudly, and now no sound came from inside the room. John Henry stopped short of the door.
Turnage?
Yeah, I got him.
John Henry stepped into the doorway, gun leveled in case this was some sort of trick on Axminster's part. His eyes narrowed against the glare of the match, and he saw Axminster sprawled face down on the bed. The deputy had a bloody lump on the back of his head, and John Henry guessed it came from the butt of the gun Turnage held as the teller stood next to the bed.
He was so sound asleep he never heard me sneak in.
You didn't kill him, did you?
Nah, he's breathing. I'm gonna tie him and gag him, and then Nate Farnham is supposed to come and help me take him to the jail.
Can Nate handle that?
Don't worry. He'll do whatever his father tells him to do, or die trying.
John Henry nodded. The first step of the plan was almost complete. They wouldn't have to worry about Axminster now. He left Turnage binding the deputy's hands and left the boarding house. The storm over the mountains had moved closer. John Henry saw streaks of lightning clawing across the sky like skeletal fingers. The businesses along Main Street were all dark. Using caution and stealth, he made his way to the sheriff's office. When he got there, he tried the door, only to find it locked. That was an obstacle, but not a major one. He was prepared for it. The door had a small, square peephole in it. Gil Hobart looked out at him.
Who's there?
It's John Cobb, Gil. Let me in.
Oh, you ain't on duty tonight. I ain't supposed to let nobody in unless it's the sheriff or one of the deputies that's on duty.
I know that, but I was able to sneak a piece of Kate Collins' apple pie out of the kitchen tonight. I thought you might want it.
John Henry held up the saucer with the slab of pie on it that he had brought from the boarding house. Sometime in the past, Gil Hobart had sampled Kate's pie, and John Henry had heard him proclaim on numerous occasions that it was the best pie Hobart had ever eaten.
You ain't gonna tell the sheriff about this, are you, Cobb?
And get in trouble myself? I don't think so.
All right, hurry up and come on in.
Hobart swung the door closed behind him and didn't lock it. John Henry took the saucer over to the desk and set it down.
Dig in, Gil.
Hobart came over to the desk and opened a drawer to dig out a fork. There were several utensils in there that were used by the deputies whenever meals on trays were brought over from Abernathy's cafe. John Henry eased behind him as Hobart cut off a big bite of the pie and stuffed it in his mouth.
Oh.
John Henry rested his right hand on the butt of his Colt and got ready to reach down with his left and pluck Hobart's revolver from its holster. Steve Buckner stepped into the room and leveled the gun in his hand at John Henry.
Don't do it, Cobb, or whatever the hell your name is.
John Henry didn't try to draw. Fast with a gun though he might be, he couldn't outdraw a revolver that was already pointed right at him.
What in the hell are you doing, Steve?
Keeping you from being cold-cocked on the head by this lying son of a gun, Gil. He's a deputy United States Marshal.
Really? A federal star packer?
I believe Steve's mixed up. I don't think John Cobb ever carried a badge for Uncle Sam.
I reckon he sure as hell didn't, but you ain't John Cobb. I never did catch your name when I was listening in on those little get-togethers in the stable behind the boarding house, mister. But I know who you are and why you're here.
It didn't matter how Buckner had tumbled or what was going on. The whole plan depended on John Henry taking control of the jail. If he failed, then in a short time, his newfound allies would begin showing up with their captives, only to be taken prisoner or killed themselves.
I don't know what you think you heard, Buckner, but you got it all wrong, that's for sure.
Yeah, Steve, I don't think a real lawman would bring me pie.
Damn it, Gil, forget about the pie. Move away from him. If he pulls iron on me, you don't want to get caught in the crossfire.
John Henry knew he'd run out of time. Hobart being so close to him was the only thing keeping Buckner from squeezing the trigger. Once the jailer was clear of him, he wouldn't have a chance to do anything except make a desperate grab for his gun and get himself killed. If he was going to make a play that might actually work, it had to be now. Hobart picked up the saucer, unwilling to leave his pie behind. John Henry suddenly put his hand under the saucer and shoved it up, smashing the pie into Hobart's face. John Henry darted behind him. He reached around and plucked the saucer from Hobart's fingers and sent it spinning across the room, straight at Buckner's face. Buckner ducked instinctively, but the saucer clipped him on the head anyway. John Henry charged in right behind it. The deputy's head struck hard against the door jamb, but the impact failed to knock him out. He fought back, slamming a punch to the side of John Henry's head. John Henry shrugged off the punishment and hooked his right fist into Buckner's belly. John Henry grabbed the wrist of Buckner's gun hand and forced it down, at the same time bringing up his knee. Buckner's hand hit John Henry's knee and the fingers relaxed their grip on the gun. John Henry wrenched the weapon away from the deputy and smashed it across Buckner's face. Bunching his fingers in Buckner's shirt front, John Henry pivoted and slung him across the room toward the desk. Then he flipped Buckner's gun around and leveled it at the jailer.
Don't try anything, Gil. I've got you covered.
Cobb, you're really what Steve said?
Afraid so. Reach across with your left hand and take your gun out, slow and careful-like. Put it on the desk.
Take it easy.
Hobart followed John Henry's orders and set the gun on the desk.
I ain't no gunslinger, and I don't have any hankering to get shot, neither.
Is the cell block unlocked?
Yeah, no prisoners up there now.
John Henry circled to the side and kept Buckner's gun pointed at the jailer. He used the barrel to gesture toward Buckner.
Come over here and pick him up. You're going to take him up the stairs, and both of you are going into one of the cells.
You're locking us up?
That's the idea.
Well, it ain't gonna work. One of the other deputies will just come along and let us out and we start yelling for help.
Good point. You'll tie and gag Buckner and put him in one cell, and then I'll lock you in another one.
Well, there still won't be anything stopping me from yelling.
Well, I could just kill you. That would keep you quiet.
Or I could cooperate and let you tie and gag me too.
That's what I'd rather do. You don't seem like that bad an hombre, Gil. You just got poor taste in bosses.
You came here to put the sheriff out of business, is that it?
That's it.
Well, I reckon that's fine by me. Now, I ain't saying I never pulled anything crooked in my life, but some of the things I've seen since coming here to Chico, well, I just didn't cotton to them, that's all. The only reason I stuck was because I only had to take care of the jail, and I didn't have to be out there making life miserable for folks. I'll play along with you, Cobb.
Six Killer. That's my real name. John Henry Six Killer.
It suits you. Just don't kill me, because I ain't going to give you no trouble.
Hobart picked up the still senseless Buckner and slung the deputy over his shoulder. John Henry switched Buckner's gun to his left hand and drew his own Colt as he followed Hobart up the stairs to the cell block. While John Henry kept him covered, Hobart lowered Buckner onto the bunk in one of the cells. Then he tied his hands behind his back and stuffed a bandana in his mouth to serve as a gag. John Henry was careful about approaching the big jailer, still wary of a trick, but Hobart kept his word and cooperated. He let John Henry tie his hands and gag him.
When all this is over, I'll remember how you helped me out like this, Gil. That might make some difference in how the law looks at things.
With that taken care of, the jail was in John Henry's hands. He hurried downstairs to wait for the others to show up with their prisoners. He'd been listening for gunshots, but the settlement remained quiet as if nothing were going on tonight. That couldn't be any further from the truth. John Henry blew out the lamp and went over to look out the peephole.
It's us, Marshal.
Turnage was showing a lot of confidence that John Henry had been successful in capturing the jail. That confidence wasn't misplaced. John Henry saw Turnage's slender form beside the massive hulking shape of Nate Farnham. Nate had Fred Axminster cradled in his arms like a baby. Axminster had regained consciousness. He'd been gagged. He jerked his head around, but that was all he could do. Nate's arms might as well have been iron bands strapped around him.
Did everything go as planned?
So far. As far as I know, anyway. I don't know what's happening at the hotel.
Nate and I are on our way to the blacksmith shop to join up with Peabody and the others. As soon as we put Deputy Axminster in one of the cells.
Take him on up, Nate.
You're a friend now, right?
That's right, Nate. This man is our friend.
All right, then.
Nate carried Axminster up the stairs as if the deputy weighed only as much as a puppy or a kitten. Axminster had about as much chance of getting loose as a puppy or kitten would have, too. Turnage followed them up the stairs to make sure Axminster was locked up securely. John Henry waited by the door in the darkened office in case any of his co-conspirators showed up with more prisoners. Turnage and Nate came down and slipped out to rendezvous with Nate's father and the other men waiting at the blacksmith shop. John Henry wanted to go with them. Even though he had picked the job of staying here at the jail for this part of the operation because it was the key to everything, not being in the middle of the action chafed at him.
Soon enough,
the time for stealth would be over, and they could take the fight to the rest of the enemy. Somewhere out there was Samuel Dav. And every instinct in John Henry's body told him that the two of them would be facing each other with guns in their hands before the night was over. Only one lamp was burning in the newspaper office. Edgar Wellman leaned back in the chair behind the desk and watched Dav reading the sheets of paper the sheriff held in his hand. He felt some justifiable anxiety as he waited to see if Dav liked what he had written. Finally, Dav nodded and set the sheaf of papers back on the desk.
Not bad. The stories make it sound like I'm responsible for everything good that happens in this part of the territory, whether I really had anything to do with it or not. And they completely ignore the more problematical aspects of the situation.
That's what you wanted, isn't it?
Exactly. And you can get these stories printed in newspapers scattered all over the territory?
I think so. It may take a while, but I guarantee you, Sheriff, within 6 months, nearly everyone in New Mexico will have heard of the gallant fighting lawman named Samuel Dav.
That put a pleased smile on Dav's face.
Good. When it comes time for the president to appoint a new territorial governor, I want my name to be the first one that comes to mind.
Why would the president need to appoint a new governor? I thought General Wallace was doing a good job.
Never mind about that. Maybe you'd better get started working on the first speech I'll be making once I take office. I know it'll be a while yet, but it doesn't hurt to be prepared.
Wellman was about to ask more questions when he decided it might be wise not to press Dav on the issue.
I didn't know you wanted me to write your political speeches for you, too.
I've been impressed with your work, Edgar. You're good at what you do.
Praise such as that had always pleased Wellman. He found that it wasn't quite so flattering when it came from the likes of Dav. However, he had thrown his lot in with the sheriff, and it would be dangerous to try to back out now.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Sheriff.
Call me Sam. We're going to be partners now, after all.
All right, Sam.
Make sure you put something in that speech about how I'm going to crack down on lawlessness from one end of the territory to the other. There aren't going to be gangs or crooks preying on the people of New Mexico anymore.
If Dav got his way, that would be true. There would be only one gang of crooks preying on the citizens, and its headquarters would be in the territorial governor's office. Wellman gathered up the papers and aligned them in a neat stack on his desk. He went into his living quarters at the rear of the building. The window was open back there to let in a little fresh air.
He'll be waiting for us at the jail.
The man's voice was familiar, and after a couple of seconds, the newspaper man placed it. It belonged to Alvin Turnage, one of the tellers at the bank.
And then we'll go after the other deputies, right?
That question came from Peabody Farnum, the blacksmith. Turnage and Farnum. Something about the deputies. That didn't make any sense. But Wilman's journalistic instincts were starting to kick in now. His gut told him that something was going on in Chico tonight. Something big and important and probably dangerous. His first thought was to go find Sheriff Dav or some of the deputies and warn them. If he did that, though, he wouldn't be able to see how the story was going to play out. And the story was everything, wasn't it? He couldn't very well report the news if he was helping to make it, could he? The men who'd been behind the newspaper office had gone on now. Wilman pushed the curtains aside and raised the window more so he could lean through it and look along the alley. It was plenty dark back here, but he could make out the shapes of half a dozen men dragging some limp forms. They were headed for the jail, Turnage had said. Wilman's pulse began to race as he recalled that. The townspeople were fighting back at last. They were staging a coup, an uprising, against Dav's tyrannical rule. But even if they had managed to capture a few of the deputies, they wouldn't stand any chance against the rest of the sheriff's cold-blooded killer crew, would they? Wellman didn't know the answer to that, but he knew one thing. He was going to find out. The odds against the groups of townies being able to capture the off-duty deputies and bring them to the jail without being discovered were astronomical. John Henry wasn't really expecting it to happen. But the more of Dav's men who could be taken out of the fight at the start, the better. It was a matter of making the odds not quite so overwhelming. Still, when Turnage, the Farnums, Ben, and several other men arrived at the jail with four prisoners, John Henry began to hope maybe the plan would work without any hitches after all.
Any problems?
Peabody and Nate hauled the bound, gagged, and unconscious deputies up the stairs to the cell block.
Nah, we got in the back door of the Buzzard's Nest without any trouble. There was one moment when I was worried when one of the girls who works there discovered us, but she didn't give the alarm. She just looked at us and turned away. She probably has grudges of her own against the sheriff's men.
More than likely.
We took them one by one, knocked them out, tied them up. They weren't any match for Peabody and Nate. Not many men would be.
I can testify to that.
What about the men who are going to the hotel?
I haven't seen or heard anything from them. But maybe that's good. There hasn't been any shooting or yelling from over there.
Yeah, the old idea that no news is good news, eh? I wish I could believe that. You want us to go and see if we can find out what's holding them up?
No, you and the others are going to fort up here for the time being. Nobody's going back out there until we're all together again.
Turnage looked like he might want to argue the point. John Henry drew his gun as he approached the door.
Who's out there?
Kate Collins.
John Henry tensed in surprise. Kate and her grandfather were supposed to stay at the boarding house tonight, well out of the line of fire. Jimson was too old to be right in the middle of a gun battle, and Kate was a woman. And although John Henry knew she might argue that such an attitude was unfair, he couldn't help the way he felt about such things.
Get inside, quick. What are you...
Get in here! Alvin, hold the jail!
I'm coming with you.
No, you're not. I need a good man to take over here. Lock the door behind me.
John Henry ran toward the hotel. It was as if men were firing at each other from behind cover. The flash from the electrical display in the heavens lit up the street and the boardwalks for a second. And during that time, John Henry spotted another man running toward the hotel. He recognized the stocky form of Deputy Aaron Kemp.
Cobb, you know what's going on? What's all that shooting?
John Henry and Kemp both reached the front of the hotel at the same time.
The shots came from inside. We better find out what's happening.
Have you seen Steve?
No. Maybe he's inside.
Concern for his friend made Kemp turn toward the hotel's double doors. As he did so, John Henry stepped behind him. John Henry reached down, grabbed the collar of Kemp's shirt, and dragged him to the end of the boardwalk and into the dark mouth of the alley beside the hotel. He ran down the alley. Pausing at the side door, he waited for a second, then jerked it open and went through in a rush. The stairs were to John Henry's right. He went up, taking the stairs two or three at a time. Stopping at the top of the staircase, he went to a knee and took off his hat to peer around the corner into the upper corridor. At the far end of the hall were the main stairs that led down into the lobby. A man lay there on the landing, face down. John Henry's mouth tightened into a grim line as he spotted the pool of blood spreading around the man's head. He couldn't see the dead man's face, but the man's clothes told John Henry that he was one of the townspeople, not a deputy. That meant one of his allies had already been killed. Another man was down at the landing, lying behind a small table he had overturned. He fired over the top of it at an open door about halfway along the corridor. At least two men were inside the room that went with that door. The angle was bad on both sides, but the two men inside the hotel room had the advantage of superior firepower. Eventually, they would shoot that table to pieces. It wouldn't stop their bullets much longer. John Henry thought furiously. The room where the deputies were holed up was on the front side of the hotel. A narrow balcony ran along there. John Henry figured that represented his best chance to get the drop on them. He put his hat on and stood up, then ducked around the corner from the rear stairs and lowered his shoulder, ramming it against the closest door. Light from the hall spilled into the empty room. He went to the window and thrust up the sash and stepped over the sill onto the balcony. He had counted the doors, so he knew how many windows he had to pass to reach the room he wanted. Even if he hadn't, he would have known where he needed to go because of the muzzle flashes he saw through the window. The men in the room weren't paying any attention to what was going on behind them, so they had no idea he was right outside. He tried the window, but it wouldn't go up. That left him only one way in. The balcony was only a couple of feet wide, more for decoration than anything else. John Henry drew back as much as he could. He fell toward the floor inside the room. He caught himself on his left hand as the two men in the room whirled toward him in surprise. Another lightning flash from outside revealed their faces. John Henry recognized them as two of Dav's deputies who'd been sleeping here in the hotel, just as he expected. John Henry scrambled to his feet and approached the two fallen men carefully, keeping his gun leveled in case he needed to use it again. He still had one round in the cylinder. Both deputies were dead, though, so John Henry took advantage of the chance to dump the empty cartridges and thumb in fresh rounds from the loops on his shell belt. He filled all six chambers this time instead of leaving an empty one for the Colt's hammer to rest on, as he usually did. Before this night was over, he would probably need every shot he could get. The man in the hallway had stopped shooting.
Hold your fire! I'm coming out!
Who's there?
Marshal Six Killer!
John Henry stepped into the corridor and saw the man at the landing climbing painfully to his feet. Blood stained the man's shirt on the side.
How badly are you hit? I'm sorry, what's your name, fella?
I'm Ben, and it's just a crease, I think. Hurts like blazes, though.
They'll do that.
John Henry was able to get a better look at the dead townsman now, and he recognized him as the baker, Wilhelm Heinsdorf. That was a damn shame. But it was a damn shame any innocent people had to die to free Chico from the evil grip of Samuel Dav.
What happened?
One of the deputies woke up at just the wrong time and grabbed a gun. Started blazing away at us just as we were about to grab them. Heinsdorf and I tried to fight back. The others turned tail and ran.
Not everybody's cut out for a gunfight. Were there only two deputies?
Yeah. I don't know where the others who have rooms here are.
Let's get back to the jail. We may be in for a siege now.
What do we do about Wilhelm?
Leave him here. There's nothing else we can do right now.
John Henry saw several things right away when he and Ben left the hotel. The rain was falling hard now, but the drops were still scattered. And there were three well-armed men charging up the street toward them. In the near constant flicker of lightning, John Henry recognized them as three Sheriff Dav's men. They hadn't drawn their guns yet, so he swung his Colt toward them.
Hold it right there!
Cobb, what are you—
The hell with that! Nobody throws down on me!
The deputy clawed his revolver from its holster. John Henry recognized the man who had gone for his gun as Hoffman, one of the deputies he had clashed with at the pass east of the settlement. He raised his Colt. At John Henry's side, Ben opened up on the other two. They reacted with the swift, deadly instincts of professional gunmen, weaving away from each other so they'd be harder to hit as they drew their guns. As Ben got shot, he raised his gun. Fate must have guided the shot. One of the remaining deputies doubled over as the slug punched into his guts. John Henry aimed at the remaining deputy. John Henry turned and grabbed the arm of the wounded man who had fought at his side, steadying him.
Come on, let's get you to the jail.
They turned in that direction. From the corner of his eye, John Henry caught glimpses of the shadowy forms firing at them. They had to be more of Dav's men, and if those men had seen the gunfight moments earlier, they knew that Cobb had turned on them. Thus, all their gunfire aimed at John Henry and the man stumbling along beside him. John Henry started back toward the hotel, but realized a second later that he and his companion couldn't get there. The two men were bracketed now, with leaden death both behind them and in front of them. The only bit of cover was a wagon parked in front of the building next to the hotel. They reached the wagon and crouched between it and the boardwalk. Ben was leaning against one of the wagon wheels, but he was beginning to slump. His strength deserted him.
How bad are you hit?
Pretty bad. I feel all loose inside.
You'll be all right, Ben. We'll get you to the jail. Some of our other men are holed up there and they'll take care of you.
You can't do that. We're pinned down here.
John Henry didn't want to admit it, but the man was right. And taking cover behind the wagon would give them only momentary respite. In a matter of minutes, some of the deputies would circle around so they could get a better shot.
You can make a run for it if I cover you. I just need to borrow some bullets. Then I can keep them off of you long enough for you to make it to the jail.
You can't.
What I can't do is live more than another few minutes. Let me spend them trying to kill some of those bastards.
John Henry couldn't refuse that request. He took Ben's gun and filled the cylinder with cartridges from his own belt, then pressed it back into his hand. John Henry still had Buckner's gun tucked into his waistband, so he gave it to Ben, too.
When I stand up and start shooting, you light a shot for the jail.
All right. It's a hell of a thing you're doing, amigo.
Just make sure you kill Dav before the night's over.
I'll do my best.
Give me a hand. Standing up.
Ben thrust his arms to the side so that he could fire in both directions. John Henry burst from behind the wagon and sprinted toward the jail. Bullets sang past John Henry and chewed up the ground around his racing feet, but Providence and the covering fire from the dying townie shielded him. He hoped that somebody in the jail saw him coming and recognized him. As he bounded onto the boardwalk, the door to the marshal's office flew open. The jail was dark. The windows were all barred and had shutters over them that could be closed from inside. That had been done already. They would have a chance to see how well the building would hold up to an attack.
Marshal Six Killer, are you there?
I'm here.
Were you hit?
John Henry took a second to assess his condition. Sometimes in the heat of battle, a man might be wounded and not even notice it at the time.
No, I'm all right. Looks like they all missed, though I've got luck to thank for that. Certainly wasn't for lack of trying on their part.
Ben, he didn't make it. We saw him go down after he gave you a chance to make a run for it. It looked like they shot him to pieces.
He was hit bad and dying already. Otherwise, I never would have left him there. Has anybody been hitting here?
Not so far. We've been lucky, too.
John Henry added things up in his head.
We have 8 men in here, counting Jimson. There are 5 deputies locked up in the cell block. 6 if you count Hobart. 2 dead in the hotel, and 3 in the street. Although I can't be absolutely sure about the 3 in the street. Even if they're not dead, they ought to be hit bad enough that they're out of the fight.
That should leave Dav with just 10 deputies. 8 against 10, and the 8 are in a place that was built to be defended. Those aren't bad odds, Marshal.
No, they're not. But you need to add Dav himself to the mix, and throw in the fact that those deputies are professional killers, most of them. We still have our work cut out for us.
I can use a rifle, so there are 9 of us to hold the jail.
I don't know if that's a good idea. In fact, if there was any way to get you out of here without exposing you to their fire, I would.
You'd have a fight on your hands if you tried. This is my town too, Marshal, and I'll be damned if I won't stand up and try to help take it back.
John Henry knew there was no point in arguing about it. They were all stuck in here for the time being, Kate included. And there were bigger worries as well, because while the jail was plenty sturdy, sooner or later those inside it would run out of ammunition, not to mention food and water.
What's the situation with supplies? Does anybody know?
I have no idea. Should we make an inventory? We'll need light for that.
John Henry fished a lucifer from his pocket.
No point in standing around in the dark now. We're already under siege, and I don't expect that to change anytime soon.
He lit the lamp on the sheriff's desk, and as the yellow glow welled up and filled the room, he took a look around. The men who stood at the rifle slits, aiming out into the night, had taken their weapons from the racks on the wall. John Henry opened a cabinet next to the gun racks and found a dozen boxes of ammunition. They weren't going to run out of firepower anytime soon. Food and water were a different story. He found some canned peaches on a shelf in the small storeroom behind the office, along with a couple of bottles of whiskey. That was it for provisions. The peaches would last less than a day, and John Henry figured it wouldn't be a good idea for any of them to be sampling the rot gut. They would need to keep their wits about them.
How long do you think we can hold out?
Until morning, for sure. Probably on up into the day.
But not indefinitely.
No, not indefinitely.
And there's no help on the way, is there?
No. Governor Wallace sent me here alone. If you're thinking that if I don't get in touch with him by a certain time, he'll send in the army, that's not going to happen.
Our plan was to take the fight to them. Out there in the open, where we had a chance to move around, we might have been able to make a fight of it. Stuck in here, all we can do is wait for them to starve us out.
That's true, Alvin. Unless we can come up with a way to turn things around so that the odds are on our side.
I don't think that's possible.
Almost anything is possible. Sometimes it's just not easy. But I may have an idea.
Edgar Wellman had hunkered down behind a rain barrel while the gun battle was going on in the street. A stray bullet could kill a man just as dead as one aimed straight at him. One thing was certain, Cobb wasn't who he'd said he was. Wellman couldn't help but wonder if he wasn't another of those undercover investigators sent in by the governor. If that was the case, the man had lasted longer than the others. He had even persuaded the townspeople to stage some sort of uprising against Dav. But from the looks of things, the man's string had played out tonight. He and his allies were trapped inside the jail. Wellman shook the rainwater from his hat and stood up. A quick look around the corner revealed the tall, lean, predatory figure of Sheriff Samuel Dav striding along the boardwalk toward him.
Sheriff!
Dav's reaction was instantaneous. He stopped short and drew his gun with blinding speed.
No, hold your fire. Don't shoot, Sheriff. It's me, Edgar Wellman.
Wellman, what are you doing here?
I'm a journalist, Sheriff, and there's a big story going on in Chico tonight. It's my duty to witness it and report on it.
Come on out of that alley. Nobody's gonna bother shooting at you.
Wellman stepped up onto the boardwalk. He was glad to be out of the rain, which was falling at a steadier rate now.
Do you know what's going on here? There are dead men lying in the street, and they look like some of my deputies.
They are some of your deputies. Cobb and another man gunned them down a little while ago.
Cobb, are you sure?
The lightning was bright enough for me to get a good look. It was Cobb, all right. Although I'd wager that's not really his name, Sheriff. I think he was just pretending to be a notorious gunfighter when he came here. Although he does seem to handle a Colt with considerable skill.
He must be an outside lawman of some sort.
That would be my guess as well.
Do you know where the rest of my deputies are?
I think some of them may have been captured and locked up inside the jail. That's where Cobb, we might as well call him that for now, and his friends are holed up. They were trying to stage a coup against you tonight, Sheriff.
They can't do that! I'm the legally elected sheriff in these parts. If they attack me and my men, that makes them outlaws.
It appears they're willing to risk that. I'm sure they thought that if they could remove you from power, they could appeal to the territorial governor for clemency later on.
And Wallace probably would have granted it to them. Well, they'll never get the chance. I'll have their hides, each and every one of them. How dare they try to stage a violent insurrection and then insult me even more by taking refuge in my jail?
Dev's reaction didn't surprise Wellman. The sheriff was mad. Clearly, he believed that he had the right to run roughshod over anyone who opposed him. He believed it was his destiny to rule over first Chico and then eventually the entire territory. And fanatical though he might be, Dav had a chance to make that fever dream come true. All it took was telling people what they wanted to hear, even though most of it was lies. That and crushing any real opposition into bloody ruins, no matter what it took. That was what Dav had to do tonight. He had to make sure this uprising was put down in swift, brutal, ruthless fashion. He had to teach a harsh lesson to anyone who dared to oppose him. And he had to kill the man who'd pretended to be John Cobb. That might be the most important thing of all.
Stay here out of the way where you won't get hurt. When this is over, you'll have to write about how one of my own men betrayed me and tried to help outlaws take over my town. It'll make people admire me even more when they read about how I stopped that lawless horde from prevailing.
Of course, Sheriff. That jail is awfully solid. How are you going to get them out of there?
Let me worry about that.
John Henry let himself into the cell block. By now, all the prisoners had regained consciousness, but they were still tied and gagged, so all they could do when they saw him was to writhe around on the bunks. He hadn't brought a lamp or lantern with him, but once the cell block door was open, enough light came from downstairs for him to see the window at the end of the corridor between the cells. It wasn't barred, but when he examined it more closely, he saw that it had been nailed shut. That problem could be dealt with. He went back downstairs and found a hammer in the storeroom.
You need a hand with something?
You might be better at this than I am. Come on.
Kate intercepted them on the way to the stairs.
What are you doing?
Peabody's just giving me a hand with something.
You can keep an eye on Nate for me for a few minutes, can't you, Miss Kate?
Of course, but if there's some other way I can help...
There's not. Not right now, anyway. Can you pull those nails?
You bet I can. Let me see that hammer.
Farnum took the tool from John Henry. The nail heads had been bent over. Farnum straightened them without much trouble, then caught one of them in the hammer's claw. Farnum made short work of the nails.
Window ought to open now. Looks like it might have been painted shut, too, but that won't be a problem.
Farnum handed the hammer to John Henry and got hold of the window.
I think I know what you're fixing to do, and you better take somebody with you. I'll come.
No offense, Peabody, but I don't think you're really built for clambering around on top of buildings. Besides, Nate would worry himself sick.
Yeah, that's true, he would. But maybe one of the other fellas could go. Mr. Turnage, maybe.
I need him to stay here, too, to take charge of things while I'm gone.
Although John Henry didn't say it, the main reason he didn't want anyone to come with him was because he didn't want to be responsible for their safety. He could move faster and more efficiently if he only had to worry about getting himself killed. Not wanting anything to hinder him, he took off his hat and coat. Earlier, he had reloaded his Colt and filled all the loops in his shell belt from one of the ammunition boxes in the cabinet.
You're not going back downstairs before you leave?
You can tell the others where I've gone.
Miss Kate's liable to be mighty unhappy about you risking your neck without saying goodbye to her first.
I think you're wrong about that. It's not like she has any special feelings for me.
John Henry didn't have time to ponder that now. He climbed out the window. His right hand closed over the edge of the roof next to the sheriff's office. He heaved with his arms and went up and over the short wall around the rooftop. He lay there for a moment with the rain falling on him. The leading edge of the storm had moved on so that the lightning was now in the distance, but the rain was still steady. That made the night very dark, and since John Henry's trousers and shirt were dark as well, he hoped that would help him blend into the shadows. That was one reason he had left his lighter-colored hat inside the jail. John Henry saw a couple of men on the rooftop next to him, their shapes dim and shadowy in the rain. They were carrying something. They extended it across the gap between buildings. John Henry knew it had to be a ladder. They were going to use it as a bridge. That wasn't a bad idea. With the ladder there, he wouldn't have to risk making the jump in the rain. All he had to do was deal with the two deputies who were about to cross over to the jail. He wasn't sure what they intended to do once they got there, since as far as Dav knew, the second floor window on the back of the building was still nailed shut from the inside.
Hold on to that damn ladder.
The deputy started across, crawling on hands and knees, almost as if the ladder were upright and he was climbing it. The other man braced the ladder so it wouldn't slip. When the first deputy reached the roof, he stood up and turned back toward his partner.
Throw it across, but make sure it's a good throw.
The second deputy picked up something from the roof where he stood, held it cradled in both hands, and then carefully tossed it across the gap. The first deputy reached out and gathered it in, clutching it tightly against his body.
I don't see how you're gonna light the fuse in this rain.
The stovepipe's got a cover on it. All I have to do is hold the dynamite under that, light the fuse, and drop these sticks right down the pipe. They'll blow the stove to pieces and cut down everybody in the office.
That'll make a hell of a mess out of the office, too.
Yeah, well, it's the sheriff's idea, so I reckon he's willing to make a mess to teach those bastards a lesson.
How's he gonna teach them anything if they're blowed up?
Well, It'll teach the rest of the town, I guess.
The man carrying the dynamite turned toward the spot where the stovepipe stuck up a foot or so from the rooftop. John Henry surged to his feet and leveled his gun at the deputy.
Drop that dynamite, mister!
Instead of following the order, the man whirled around to face John Henry and grabbed desperately for the gun in his holster. Just as John Henry's bullet ripped through the air, the bundle of explosive cylinders intercepted the slug's path. The force of the explosion threw John Henry backward. He rolled onto his side and struggled to lift his gun. The explosion had half blinded him as well as deafened him, but as he blinked rapidly, he was able to spot some muzzle flashes from the other roof. He rolled over onto his belly and pushed himself to hands and knees. John Henry struggled to his feet and looked around. The ladder was gone, dislodged from its position by the blast. The roof had collapsed where the man had been standing when the dynamite went off, leaving a gaping hole with ragged, splintered edges. The hole was a good 10 feet wide. John Henry found himself looking down into the cell block. The deputy who'd been in the cell directly underneath the explosion was dead, turned into a gory mess by the debris that had come crashing down on him. He moved over to the front of the building. Dav's men had increased their frontal assault on the jail. Muzzle flashes flickered like fireflies from the building across the street where they had forded up. If he could get behind them, he could turn the tables. The ladder might be gone, but he could still make the jump across to the other building. But as he turned in that direction, more men appeared up there. The other deputy must have gotten away and spread the word that he was up here trying to escape the trap that the jail had become. John Henry kept his head down and crawled over to the hole in the roof. Holstering his gun, John Henry turned around and maneuvered backward until his legs were dangling over the opening. He slid the rest of the way into the hole, hanging by his hands for a second before he let go and dropped into the wrecked cell. The blast had buckled the door of this cell so that it was partially open. John Henry grasped the bars and forced it back enough for him to slip through the opening. Across the aisle, Steve Buckner had finally worked his gag loose enough.
Damn it, Cobb!
Six Killer. My name's John Henry Six Killer.
I don't give a damn what your name is. Untie me and give me a gun.
So you can shoot me? I'm not that loco, Buckner.
Nope, blast it! I'll help you. Dav's bound to have you outnumbered, and you can use every gun you can get.
Why would you turn on the sheriff that way?
Because I know Kate's here. Dav will wipe out the whole bunch of you, including her, and I can't let that happen. Anyway, I may be a hard case, but Dav's like some sort of crazy wolf. When he whipped that fella the way he did, I knew I couldn't keep backing his play for much longer. Listen, I don't blame you for not believing me, but it's the truth, Cobb. I mean, Six Killer. What are you anyway?
Deputy U.S. Marshal.
Well, I can't say as I'm surprised. You put up a pretty good front, but I always thought you weren't quite as low down as the rest of us. Turn me loose and give me a gun, and I'll try to make up for some of what I done while working for Dav.
Alvin Turnage came into the cell block holding a rifle.
Marshal, you all right?
Shaking up a little, but I reckon I'll be fine.
What in the world happened up there?
One of Dav's men was going to drop a bundle of dynamite down the stovepipe and blow everybody to kingdom come. I stopped him. Not quite the way I intended, but...
Good Lord, the dynamite?
Yeah, and then before I could get off the roof, more of Dav's men showed up and pinned me down. All I could do was drop down through that hole.
So we're still stuck here?
That's about the size of it.
I can help you.
Shut up. Why should we trust the likes of you?
Because I love Kate Collins. And if Dav has his way, he'll wipe out everybody in here, including her. That business with the dynamite is proof enough of that. I'll do whatever I have to do to save Kate. And when it's over, you can lock me up again. I'll take what's coming to me.
He sounds like he's telling the truth.
Maybe so, but he's been one of Dav's men all along.
All I was interested in was the loot. I know that makes me a sorry son of a bitch, but I never killed nobody for him. Dav had an inner circle, a Miller, and a few others who took care of that. I'd testify to it in court, too.
I trust your judgment, Marshal.
Get the keys and a Winchester, and tell everybody what we're doing. We don't want any of them getting trigger-happy when they see that Buckner's loose.
John Henry looked at Buckner.
I'll be keeping an eye on you. The first time it even looks like you're thinking about double-crossing us, I aim to put a bullet in your head.
You don't have to worry about that. I want to settle Dav's hash as much as you do. I figure that's my only chance with Kate.
We'll see.
Turnage came back with the keys and one of the rifles.
Peabody thinks he's lost your mind. So do I, if I'm being honest.
Buckner knows that if he tries anything, I'll shoot him.
John Henry went inside and untied the deputy's bonds. Buckner stood up shakily from the bunk and rubbed his wrists to get some feeling back in his hands.
You won't be sorry about this, Six Killer.
I'd better not be, because you'll be dead if I am.
How about you stop threatening me and give me a gun?
John Henry handed him the Winchester.
Somebody's got to guard this hole in the roof to make sure Dad doesn't send some of his men through it. I think that's a good job for you.
All right. What's to stop me from climbing out and getting away?
If you're telling the truth about how you feel about Kate, you won't do that. You'll stay here and do everything you can to protect her.
Now you're starting to understand. You know Dad will try something else, don't you? He won't have the patience to try starving you out.
That's what I figured. Now it's just a matter of waiting to see what he comes up with next.